Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista, Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living, so on each one of our programs, we discuss some aspect of human nature, politics, life in general, from the point of view of human nature itself.
And looking at Thanksgiving 10 days from now, we're going to talk about gratitude and thankfulness tonight.
And Thanksgiving, we're going to start off, Pat's mostly going to give us a little history of Thanksgiving, kind of the homework on the history of Thanksgiving.
Many of us probably forgot about how we got started with Thanksgiving, other than, oh, it had something to do with the Indians. But on September of 1620, 102 people left Plymouth, England. Most of that was to escape religious persecution. And 3 months later, they came to Plymouth Rock, which was in Virginia at the time. And before they disembarked from the Mayflower, they signed what was called the Mayflower Compact, which was the first document of civil government and the first document of self-government ever signed.
And actually, Thanksgiving itself is not a uniquely American thing. The British were doing it, the Pilgrims were doing it before they ever left Europe. The Wampanoag Indians, if I said that correctly, actually had their own Thanksgiving celebrations. They, of course, had a different language and structured it differently, but Thanksgiving is kind of a general human term.
And of those 102 people that landed at Plymouth Rock, half of them died that first winter from lack of, some of them starved to death.
And they actually only, the first winter was the winter that they arrived. And
right.
So they really didn't have a harvest that year. They had a lot of trouble leaving the ship, and when they finally did, they built some structures, but the first one burnt down, and it was just a bad year.
Right. They did not actually have a winter harvest that year.
The second year, which was their first harvest, they only planted 26 acres. The second year, they planted 60 acres, but in 1623... spurred on by individual enterprise, 184 acres were planted.
And that's incredible when you think of the few people that were there, roughly 60 people, took care of 184 acres.
And, of course, the way they did that was that nasty free enterprise. There are some statements from Governor Benford, because the previous harvest had not gone well, and so they were all harvesting and everything in a communal fashion. The harvest and the work and the eating was all done by everyone as a shared enterprise. And that didn't work out because they had too many people who alleged weakness and inability became unable to do the work. And so they couldn't bring in the harvest the way they wanted.
Well, then, and they also were continuing have to homestead. They were still building structures. They were still providing clothing for each other, everything else that was required of them other than just tending a garden.
And in addition, they didn't understand the climate and the what would grow well in that area as well as the Native Americans did who were living there.
And it was thanks to those Wampanoag Indians who assisted them that first summer in educating them on what to grow here in the new colonies.
And, of course, one of those Indians ended up living in the colony for the rest of his life. But that was only partially responsible. They had to change their, I guess you would call it, their community politics in order to really be able to produce a good harvest. Motivated by hunger, the governor at the time, when they changed their decision about how to grow and how to assign properties, had said that there was not enough, essentially, fear of hunger among the populace.
And there wasn't a lot of diversity of what they could grow. The Indians were growing corn, and they educated them on growing corn, but there basically was squash family vegetables, and the wildlife is, you know, deer, ducks, geese is basically what they were trying to survive on, and fish.
And the Indians, of course, knew where all those things were, too, and the best way to harvest the animals.
And hunting in the winter is a whole different story of hunting in the summer, and it didn't take long for them to realize they had to grow fruits and vegetables to survive, to sustain them over the winter.
And during some of the harvests early on, there was also a quote from the governor that said, "Much was stolen by night and day before it became scarce eatable, and much more afterward. And although many were well whipped, yet hunger made others whom conscience did not restrain to venture." So the famine continued to ensue, and of course, once each person owned their own property, they were much more vigilant about who might come and steal their vegetables.
Well, that, and think about it, if you are in a communal system, then it's easy to slack off because you have nothing to gain. You're still going to get fed. It might not be to a robust amount, but it will sustain you. Whereas if you have what we call skin in the game, you're going to benefit personally by growing more for your family or a different substance for your family, then you're more diligent about doing it.
And so there's a quote from Governor Bradford, who was leading the colony at the time, where he says, "At length, after much debate of things," and this was after the poorer harvest previously, "the governor, with the advice of the chiefest among them, gave way that they should set corn every man for his own particular, and in that regard trust to themselves, and all other things to go on in the general way as before, and so assigned to every family a parcel of land. This had very good success, for it made all hands very industrious, so as much more corn was planted than otherwise. The women went now willingly into the field and took the little ones with them to set corn, where before they would allege weakness and inability." And again, this was the governor himself speaking, not some current political person.
And he was the governor of what was then Virginia. And again, this goes back to America was based on land ownership. They would give you land to harvest, and you could benefit by whatever you grew or used that land to produce. And thank goodness it was food in the beginning.
And they certainly needed that, the food and the shelter. And they especially needed to know from the locals how to grow the food and where to find the best hunting and so on.
The first three-day harvest didn't occur until actually in December, when the pilgrims decided that the Indians should partake of their plenty, and that was because of the Indians helping them grow the harvest over the summer.
Right. Again, people working together of their own accord. That's always the best way that things will work.
And that first Thanksgiving did not have pumpkin pie, by the way. There was no flour at that time or sugar in the colony. So you were basically with either dried beans, there were cabbage, carrots, onions, herbs, there were turnips, corn, pumpkin, and then your wildlife, your turkey, deer, ducks, geese, and fish. Those were the things that were that you could harvest and have in abundance.
Certainly none of the high fructose corn syrup. And they didn't have much in the way of wheat products either, at least in the beginning.
Nor potatoes. Those were not in the colonies in the beginning. So, and stuffing, probably not. Not the way we think of it. It was probably more of a meat, herb-type vegetable stuffing, not one based on bread, because that was not available yet.
Right. They didn't have bread, or they probably didn't make rice stuffing either.
No.
So they were more natural foods. But, of course, another probably thing that most people don't realize is that back in those days, even in places that weren't new colonies, that we didn't have the supermarkets and the freezers and the things we have today. So it was actually natural to go hungry a lot of the time. There wasn't necessarily famine all of the time, but it was natural to be hungry and to have to conserve and maybe eat only one meal a day some of the time because you had a bad harvest. But going hungry was natural, and it's a great motivator. And I think it's something we've lost today. We, for some reason, want to take away the fear from everybody of going hungry. And yet, that's what motivates us to get up and work every day.
And I think we lose sight of, you know, we modern day may have a pantry, but back then they only had a root cellar. And that was because it was underground, and it would stay about 55 degrees underground. And so they could preserve the food, potatoes or cabbages or whatever, over the winter. And cabbages were hung to dry. So a lot of their food was dehydrated by natural resources. And if they could catch fish in the ocean, they could have fresh fish or shoot a deer. But by and large, they had to eat off of what they had stored.
So if you had a good harvest, you had reason to be thankful. because the harvest could have gone bad, as so many did. And if it happened and you hadn't well prepared the year before and put up a lot of food, you could go very hungry that winter.
And remember, this was in the early 1600s, so it was another 150 years before we had some sort of a central government. So the government wasn't there to provide anything for anybody. This was all your farm, your production, and what was shared by either through the church. In fact, in 1789, George Washington signed a proclamation that declared Thanksgiving to God. That was our first original official Thanksgiving, and it was the Episcopal Church that set aside the first Thursday of November for that feast, and it was a three-day feast.
And all of the Thanksgiving celebrations that were done in the ensuing years up until 41, was it? 1941, were just individually each year they decided to do this. It wasn't a national holiday.
That's right. 1941, Congress established it as a permanent holiday. But President Abe Lincoln, in 1863, made it a national day of Thanksgiving and made it the last Thursday of November.
And again, that was just for that current year.
Yeah, well, he made it a national holiday for every year, but it wasn't official as far as recognized by Congress. And a lot of people thought that that was because of the Civil War. Gettysburg had happened that summer and the horrific loss of life and that many were on the brink of famine again.
So what's the difference between that and making it official with Congress?
Lincoln did an executive order, which is what we have discussion about today going on.
Why, that communist?
Yeah, he just declared it as a national day of Thanksgiving, where Washington had called it a Thanksgiving to God. I don't know how religious the country had come in that 150 years, but to him it was considered a national day of Thanksgiving.
Well, because they believed in many believe today that rights don't come from government. If it's a right, it comes from God. So regardless of how hard you worked at the harvest or who else helped you, they always believed that God was the ultimate source of everything. So you had to do that.
Yes, and remember, it took them 150 years to get to George Washington from the time they landed at Plymouth Rock. So that 150 years took a lot of learning and a lot of productivity, and a lot of it was based on home ownership or land ownership, and there were only 13 colonies.
And I think, again, it's as I was saying before, Thanksgiving is kind of just a natural human thing. I'm sure that, you know, 20,000 years ago, people had Thanksgiving harvests of one form or another because, you know, in Egypt, when the Nile flooded and they had the water and they had fertility, they had good crops, they probably had celebrations and Thanksgivings.
They just didn't call them that.
Right. They didn't use the English word.
Yes.
I don't think it was around yet. But it's human nature. And again, the Native Americans that were living here, they had celebrations when they had a good, you know, a good year or even one good hunt.
And today we may have a little lack of thankfulness, even at the holiday. It's a shopping day or it's a get out of work day rather than a celebration of bounty because we live in a time of abundance. So I think maybe that lack of Thanksgiving is something that is social.
Well, one remark I made earlier is about the scarcity of fear of hunger. I really think if you're afraid of being hungry, I believe that's a good state for someone to be in because it will motivate them, and when you fill your belly, you have a reason to be thankful. If everything just comes to you without effort, what is there to be thankful about?
And whenever there was poor harvests in the colonies, they always attributed it to the weakness for want of food.
Right. That's what that was actually a quote from, again, that governor, Governor Bradford. Mm-hmm. That he attributed the poor harvest to, quote, their weakness for want of food, unquote.
And that happened again and again in the colonies when they had times of struggle or even when the Redcoats came and there was a lot of war going on that wasn't actually official, but the British were here before we had a government, there were a lot of times of poor harvest, and even George Washington's troops often went without food because they were relying upon the local communities to just give the military food, and there wasn't a lot to give.
And it wasn't military that they felt really had their best interest in mind.
And so a lot of soldiers would starve. So the poor harvest for their weakness for want of food was very true.
Yeah. I'm always amazed by the United States government and how they manage the logistics of warfare.
Our country today, we have a no hunger, you might say, other than in the very poorest communities. And oftentimes we have food stamps now to provide for our hungriest citizens. And that's all now done by the government.
And it's a good thing to want to feed other people, but I think it's a bad thing to make people so comfortable that there's just not enough fear of hunger to motivate them to go out and work.
And this comes also from government many years for the colony times. The churches also provided resources for food and clothing. It was not a function of the government. This was done by the churches.
And generally there were enough of those in existence and enough charitable organizations. There were America's always been abundant with people wanting to give to other people. Some people see the homeless folks on the corner, and they imagine that they have a house somewhere and they're trying to rip us off. But look at how, if that's true and they're actually making a lot of money by standing on the corner, what does that say about the public?
And I'd hate to think that. I am the skeptic that believes they're there because of circumstances, not necessarily because they want to. And I realize there are some homeless that want to be without the responsibility of maintaining a household. But I think by and large, those that are there by circumstance.
Well, I think it's a mix like everything else. And actually, there have been some research that has shown that there are people that actually do maintain a household by begging on the street. Now, my thought about that is, so what? If they're begging and they're not harassing people and enough people give them money to maintain a lifestyle, who's the criminal and who's the victim? No one.
And we're sharing. Those of us that give have an abundance to give.
And that's my point, actually, is that even if actually the more likely it is that a panhandler on the street is making a ton of money, says more about how wonderful people are in this country that they give up that much money.
And it comes from our abundance. We have an abundance of food, and we feel like we should provide food for them. Think about how much food we throw away every year in this country. It's outrageous. How many people, even if you go to a fast food restaurant and just watch how much food they throw away in a fast food restaurant, let alone at home.
And, you know, a lot of the time, and I'm sure I'm guilty of this too, on Thanksgiving, we're not really thankful for the food that we're getting. As a matter of fact, we're more concerned with how the turkey's going to turn out or how the decorations are going to look or when is the store going to open so I can leave Thanksgiving and go shopping.
Well, I think maybe that's true except for the cook. The cook is usually the one that's really grateful it turned out good.
Well, right. They're grateful that it turned out good. There's always a reason for gratefulness. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but unrelated to food, there's just lots of reason to be grateful. I'm just saying that because of the abundance of food and the fact that we have it whether we work for it or not today, that many times we're more concerned about the trimmings of Thanksgiving than, hey, we have food on the table.
Yes.
And we're not celebrating a harvest. Back then, they were celebrating because they weren't going to starve that winter.
Exactly.
We're just celebrating because we have family and we're all going to get together and there's going to be a really good football game on today and the stores are going to open.
And we have a day off.
Yeah. Yeah, we're thankful for other things, I guess.
Yes, we didn't have to grow our meal or chase it down or go shoot it or whatever. And I think this all goes back to the bounty of the colonies and the idea of sharing it with the Indians and being grateful for the Indians' help in that harvest, because they weren't familiar with this country or what grew here or how to grow it. And so, not to mention the help, the actual physical help of harvest. It's a lot of work. And if you're half, there's only 52 of you, and some of them are women and children, that's not as much backbreaking labor that you might think.
Right. Working together. Always the sum of the whole is more than the parts. Or no, the whole is more than the sum of the parts. Because when people work together, great things are accomplished. When they work together, now, when it's a spontaneous thing where all of the people choose to work together, that's when you have wonderful things happen. When it becomes a political situation like a government of any size at all, people are no longer working together. They're working for themselves. And anyone who doesn't believe that is just is living under an illusion.
And community was pretty central back then. There wasn't big government, and the family could not survive without the community. It did take a village to survive.
And so that's a form of government, but it's a natural form. It's a form where everyone is there because as a group they know that they're all going to accomplish what they need to accomplish. And it's what we call grassroots today. It grew up of itself. It's just not the same.
And you might link it to today's society of the neighborhood watch program, where we're all looking out for each other in our homes and making sure our kid gets off the bus and goes to the house that they live in. That's how the neighborhood watch. The person that stays home during the daytime takes care of the neighborhood somewhat when everyone else is off to work.
And that's a thing to be thankful for, you know, just that your children are safe, or someone in your family. Thankfulness, the definition of thankfulness, I wrote it down here somewhere, is glad that something happened or not happened, that something or someone exists, or of relating to or expressing thanks. So you can be thankful that something didn't happen as well as something happening.
Shall we take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss definitions and things to be grateful for?
Sure. We'll take a break and we'll be right back with you. This is Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM on your dial, Bella Vista and Round Mountain. We hope you're enjoying the show tonight, and we'll return shortly.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
I'm alone with my fancies. I'll be with you, weaving romances, making believe they're true. Oh, give me.
We're back. This is Examine Life. I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
Tonight we're talking about Thanksgiving. We gave a little bit of history of Thanksgiving, a little bit about the true history of Thanksgiving and what benefited the people the most. And we've been discussing thankfulness in general with some definitions and some reasons to be thankful. And now we're going to continue that discussion.
Along with thankfulness comes gratitude and appreciation. And Elizabeth Smart, who was the victim in Utah, who was kidnapped at the age of 14, had a book come out, and it was called My Story. She was actually kidnapped, I think, in 2002, or her book didn't come out till a year or two ago. But she related in her book about what sustained her during those months of captivity. And it was her faith and her gratitude, thankful of being alive each day, or thankful for the sunshine, or the gratitude she had knowing that she had a family that loved her and that they were looking for her. And that sustained her during that horrific hell of an ordeal.
So thankfulness is actually more of an attitude, a form of humility, which actually empowers a person rather than makes them subservient. Someone once said, be thankful for your enemies, for they are your greatest teachers. They teach you patience. They teach you strength. So you should be thankful to your enemies. It's an attitude, not just a thing.
And she looked inside herself and found that. Reggie Wayne, recently of the Indianapolis Colts, on a Monday night football game, he was crying when Chris Bode had a trumpet rendition of our national anthem. And he said it was in appreciation that he felt blessed to be there. And that sense of appreciation is so intangible, and it comes upon you when you least expect it.
Exactly. Thankfulness is not something restricted to religion. If you're not religion, you can still be thankful. Any accomplishment you have in life happened because of your own effort. But it's also a result of many conditions from things that happened around you. Nothing would be possible without all of the other people who have built our society. And I'm not, again, I have to say this, I'm not talking about government. Defend your rights, defend your property, protect you from insult or injury. Those all happen from people around you. Even if you defend yourself, well, who taught you how to do that? If you have a weapon, who made it? If you have a home, who built it? Even if you built it yourself, who made the tools, the lumber, the wiring? Personal accomplishments are important and create the most meaning in our life, but all life is dependent on other life. And I have to say here, government is not life, it's an artificial construct.
Yes, and in our appreciation or our abundance, our country has a great deal of abundance, and we really want for very little in this country. We have comfort of home and liberty, and above all, we have freedoms. We have freedoms to own property, to go from one state to another to visit friends or family. We can talk openly about anything, even in a crowd of people that disagree with us.
I believe we're beginning to lack a characteristic of thankfulness. I also believe this is because we're made to believe that we can never go hungry, that we'll never want for anything. And we, as parents, are guilty of handing our children too much without having to truly earn it. There's no evil or mean thing in telling a child, you can't have that unless you do this. There's nothing wrong with that. That teaches them what's valuable in life and what's important in life. So you need to be hungry before you can be thankful that you have food.
That's true. And I think it goes to saying the same thing with as we raise our children. If they go without that car for a year or two before they get it, then they really appreciate it and they take care of it rather than it be given to them on their 16th birthday.
If they expect that car and expect you to give it to them at a certain birthday, what is there to be thankful for? They knew it was coming all along.
And they maintain an attitude of entitlement. And a part of our problem in society today is we don't have respect for anything or anybody because we have this sense that I'm entitled to it, it's mine, regardless if it's yours right now.
And all these New Age thinkers want kids to have positive feelings about themselves. Well, what's a more positive feeling than, let's say you want to go to a movie and your parent says, no, you're going to have to mow the lawn first. And you mow the lawn, and who are you going to thank for the movie? Yourself.
That's right. And it teaches you self-worth, and you appreciate your endeavors, your ability to accomplish something. That's a thankfulness that we need to teach children. It doesn't come automatically. One of these days, we're even going to understand that the abundance that we have in entertainment and technology, which we take for granted, is something that someone else has worked hard to buy for us. Mom and dad, usually for a child, gets a telephone or something else. But even we at work, how much more do you work in order to get enough money to buy that new car or whatever it is that you want?
Imagine when you were thankful because the tiger didn't eat you and you got enough meat or vegetables to be able to eat that night.
Yes, and or you had shoes to chase it.
So that's where thankfulness came from.
And we all need to be thankful for a lot of things. And believe me, there are many, many levels of thankfulness and gratitude, and none greater than that of your family and all their warts. Despite us all making fun of our families and, you know, we're coming up on a holiday that is about family. The thankfulness of all of us being able to get together and share a meal.
Imagine had Adolf Hitler gotten what he wanted. We can be thankful to our military that didn't happen. Regardless of how you feel about America and her wars, think about that. Think about every time a policeman's marching the street or driving in their squad car, preventing something from happening to your house. And you don't think about it normally. You go home, you go to bed, you expect to be able to walk in your house with complete impunity.
We have a sense of entitlement of safety in this country because we take it for granted. But we should be grateful for that.
And there are Christian religious groups who believe in living outside the government, and they think that they don't have to be patriotic, and they think they don't have to vote, but they also want that protection.
And it's, again, this is an abundance in this country that we take for granted.
And we need to be more thankful about that. I think sometimes I say, and perhaps it sounds a little grim, but I think we need to be invaded because we need to be thankful for our freedom. And we're not because we've had it for too long. We've been invincible for too long that people think we don't need a military. We're not thankful for those soldiers and what they're doing. And we're not thankful because we're not being invaded by someone who wants to destroy us.
The last time I think our country was grateful is after 9/11, when all of the emergency personnel went in to recover what was left of the towers. And I think that's the last time that America's had any sense of appreciation.
And we all seem to, hawks and doves alike, seem to want to do something about that to protect us.
And I think if we go back to appreciation and gratitude for the little things in life, for your companionship of your spouse or whomever it is that stays at home while you're gone during the day, they keep the home ready for your return, they feed the pets, they might care for your children, they support you emotionally in ways that you don't even recognize and you take for granted because you're out there in the world and letting your whatever it is, your endeavor, sustain you.
Exactly. And that's why as parents, we need to not just give our children everything. We need to make them work for things because that's how they get their sense, their personality that has thankfulness about things because everything's not automatic. You have to work for it. And when you achieve it, you become thankful.
And I think this holiday season is a perfect opportunity for your children, because they're going to interact with the elderly members of your family. And this is a good opportunity to help them realize that grandma or grandpa can't walk by themselves. They might need a wheelchair or a cane, and that child should step up and help them in some minor physical way of pushing the wheelchair, picking up something for them, rolling them up to the table. These kinds of things that they should have gratitude for that elderly person, not only for what they've accomplished in life, but for the sacrifices that they've made in the wars and everything else that we take for granted.
Right. That previous generation didn't just fight wars for us. That car that you expect your parents to give you, that's really the most amazing thing you've ever seen, was invented by someone in that previous generation. And all the technologies and things that you have, they didn't have. They had to invent those. And someone had to come up with that. And someone spent sometimes their whole life doing things like that.
And that elderly person is facing age and growing to be thankful just for movement. They have lost a lot of flexibility, and they're grateful for what they do have that we all take for granted when we can walk and run and ride a bike.
I work with a lot of elderly people, and when my patients come in to see me, sometimes it's just a simple little greeting of how are you, and they say, well, I'm alive.
That's right. They're grateful.
I woke up this morning. That's all I need to say.
And they're grateful for that. And that's where we need that fine line of great gratitude and appreciation. I'd kind of like to talk a little bit about attitude. It's easy for us to take things for granted, and attitude is everything. How you perceive your life is what you see, not what it necessarily is. And if you change your perception, you change what you see.
Exactly. You perception or thankfulness essentially is because of the kind of person you are and how you approach life. If you're thankful only to yourself, then you're going to be a bitter person, and you're going to be selfish, and you're not going to believe that anyone else should even exist.
Well, that and if you have the perception of the half-empty glass versus the half-full glass, you're always looking that it's never enough. Where if you look at the glass as it's half-full, that means that I'm satisfied even if it's only to a small degree. There is appreciation for that which I have.
I think that's why the Bill of Rights said that we have the right to pursue happiness, because when you pursue it, that's when you become thankful, because pursuing is work, and your happiness is not just there for you. You have to pursue it, and when you achieve it, you're thankful. I think we need to not have things in order to be thankful for them when we do have them. If we have them guaranteed from birth till death, then what is there to be thankful for, and why should we exist?
And your sense of appreciation diminishes when things are given to you and you don't have to work or sacrifice for them. You make a sacrifice for something, and I think of the what comes to mind is that old Christmas story where I can't remember exactly what the guy gave up to buy his wife cut off her hair to buy something that to acquire something that her husband wanted. And it was her treasure was her hair. These kinds of things, I don't think we have that sense of appreciation and gratitude today that we would actually sacrifice something for someone else.
In the story, which was a novel, not a true history, but Les Miserables, there was a mother who sold her teeth one by one to take care of her child.
That's right. The sacrifices that you endure as a parent, I think that we forget as we keep giving our children stuff that our parents sacrificed something to give that to us because there wasn't such an abundance.
And I think we see sacrifice today as a bad thing, but it's what gives meaning to your life. You know, we look at the history of our country over the last couple of hundred years, and we see, you know, the evil land barons and the slave owners and all the bad things that happened. But all of those things together created a type of personality. People didn't have guaranteed income. They didn't have guaranteed food. You had to work, If you were destitute, there was a group that would help you. But essentially, you had to work to build your life. And so you had to pursue happiness. And those values created so much wealth that in the last 100 years, we've been spending it all. But that wealth wouldn't have been there had we not had those ideals where people had to work for themselves.
Exactly. I think we have taken advantage, you might say, of the abundance of the last 50 years. And we have taken for granted our government, and now we expect and want our government to do everything for us, which is not always a good thing.
No, it rarely is a good thing, actually, because generally speaking, I know we call them civil servants, but they don't have your best wishes in mind, or your best, what's good for you in mind. They're thinking of themselves. If they're a politician, they're thinking about how they're going to get elected. If they're working in an office, they're thinking about how to get through the day. Those people are not civil servants. They get paid, in most cases, better than people in the public. So you need to rely on your family, your religious community, and yourself. They care about you.
And they do care about you. They are there at times of emotional crisis, the death of someone in the family that's close to you. Who comes to your aid? It's family and friends and your people at church. Also, if you have a medical crisis, sure, your doctor fixes you, but who supports you when you have to go back home? It's family, it's friends, it's church members.
Who's going to actually sacrifice for you? If you have an outside nurse come in, you know, there are some nurses are more compassionate than others, but essentially they're there for a salary, and they're going to work for you as according to their contract. But the one who will sacrifice for you to make sure you get what you need, that's family and friends and community.
The caregivers, what they sacrifice is unmeasurable, not to mention the neighbor that runs to the store and gets things for you because you can't drive that week. Those types of little tiny things that make your life easier at that moment in time are things we need to be thankful for and grateful for, and this is the season to say that.
And you need to be a thankful person also, because if someone is the opposite of thankful and they think they're deserving of everything, then when they need that help of community, no one really wants to help them.
But there will always be someone that steps up.
There will always be somebody that will do it anyway, and that's the amazing thing about people. And that's why I say, when I go back to talking about the panhandlers, even if they're scamming everyone and they're going back home to a house, so what? To me, it's a wonderful thing that many people are willing to give up their money without judging that person.
Exactly. And I think our society in the last couple of decades are not as gracious as maybe decades before that. And they aren't as quick to step up and help to bring the meal to someone who is stuck at home, who is ill, or has had a crisis. They don't think of that. Where I think if you look back in time, 30, 40 years ago, people did that. They automatically, a new neighbor moved into the neighborhood and they would take a pizza over there or some dessert to welcome them to the neighborhood. You don't see that kind of gratitude so much. It's more fear of the neighbor than there is appreciation.
that's true. I think a lot of that is actually the fault of us parents. You know, if you have a child and you just, because you don't want to be the mean parent, you give them everything, and then you become old and infirm, and that child doesn't want to help you because they never felt thankful about anything. I say that's your own fault, because you kind of were a lazy parent who didn't want to be not liked all the time.
And, you know, it's interesting. Women have a tendency to be more caregiving than men primarily, mostly because we're raised to raise our children. To take care of them. And the husband goes out and makes a living and comes home and brings the money home. And I think that has changed dramatically in the last couple of decades. But we still have the female is the one that cooks the meal to take to the handicapped neighbor or someone who's recovering from surgery. And I think by and large, but they too have need of gratitude. They're emotional beings, and they need to be appreciated, and they need to be thanked. Whoever it is that's cooking your Thanksgiving dinner this year, give them a hug and thank them.
Everyone needs to be thankful. The problem is that some people aren't, because they were not raised as the kind of person to be thankful. So they're missing a part of themselves because they weren't, again, they weren't given that inconvenience in life of not having everything handed to them, so they could learn. Because every time you're denied something and then you get it, you're just inherently thankful.
That's true. And this day and age where you have social media and selfies and all of the things that go on that are not family-oriented take you away from that sense of gratitude. You don't appreciate your family. They somehow are intrusive of what it is you want to do on social media or, you know, texting or what have you. And I think that that's where we need to rein in children also.
When I go through airports and my business travels, I meet people from World War II who have a hat or a shirt or something that indicates they're a World War II veteran. And I've heard some amazing stories. And we should be thankful to that generation. They're almost all gone. And, you know, I met a man in Minnesota who, going through an airport, who was in the Battle of the Bulge. And they didn't have shoes, and they were in the snow in the middle of winter. They didn't have food coming in, and they continued to fight for us. They didn't have to. They could have just hunkered down, but they fought. They didn't just hide and wait for the spring. And we need to be thankful to these people. If you see one of those men or women out there in your travels, take the time to stop and thank them, and you'll hear some amazing stories. And then you'll be thankful not only to them for what they did, but for the stories they told you.
And we have a habit of judging people for what they are today. So if you're old and decrepit, that young person sees someone who is old and decrepit. They have no idea that they flew a bomber aircraft in World War II, or they created a solution to a medical problem 25 years ago. So we need to appreciate the elderly for all that they have done as a generation, and no better time than Thanksgiving dinner.
We're going to take one more short break before we finish up our show. This is Examine Life, 88.5 KKRN in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
It is a wonderful life, and you can find snippets of it on KKRN live shows, done by local volunteers and supported by you, our listeners and underwriters. You can contact our show at examinelife@kkrn.org. Or if you want to financially support the radio station via underwriting for your company or by donation, call 530-337-1101.
I watch them grow. They learn much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself,
where can you find live radio theater today? On KKRN, of course. Wicked Fell Radio airs weekly on Thursday evenings from 8 to 8:30. Long enough to tell a good story and stimulate thoughtful conversation. Short enough to get on with your evening. Wicked Fell by Bill Shockley.
You're listening to Examine Life at KKRN 88.5 FM Bella Vista in Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat. Tonight we're talking about thankfulness and gratitude. And we'd like to thank the world for allowing us to make a living. We happen to volunteer here, but we both have jobs. We both make a living, and this great country provides that for us.
You know, if you're an employer, be thankful for the good people you've been able to find. I can't say how wonderful our employees are. They're all just people that want to help everyone. And if you're an employee, be thankful that somebody put their life on the line to make a place for you to work.
And oftentimes our work is an extension of our family. We help comfort them in time of crisis. We help provide for them in a medical emergency. And be thankful that we have each other, even though, you know, we are a part of a family and we all have our warts.
Yeah, no matter where you work, my guess is you're going to have customers of one type or another, and you got to be thankful for those customers. And for whatever, you know, a Buddhist concept is that everything in life depends upon everything else in life to exist. And if you think about it, it makes sense. You're just not thankful for the people that are your customers, but the people that fed them, that keep them alive, that cause whatever it is, the need that they have for whatever your product is. It just goes on and on. There's plenty around you to be thankful for.
And part of that thankfulness is for this country. Many people sacrifice their lives for our freedoms and our bountifulness, and we need to be thankful for our country that does have its flaws, and we've tried to right those as history's progressed. Our mistakes, we've tried to right those, but we should be thankful for what we have. There's no better place on earth than this country.
You know, America, I think, is almost unique in that aspect. If you look at the European colonial years, you'll notice that basically those empires had to be forced into giving up their colonial way of life and giving those countries back to the inhabitants, whereas in America, we tend to do that as a rule. No matter what evil reason you think we're going into a country, we always give it back to them. And we have internal strife. We tore ourselves apart over slavery and cured it and got rid of it. We've torn ourselves apart over racial equality. And in spite of what some people who make money off of that would say, I think we've just about beat it in a general sense. You'll always have racial people in every part of the world, in every aspect of life. But America has tortured itself to do the right thing. This is a wonderful country, and we all need to be thankful about it.
The abundance it provides us, the opportunities it provides us. If you don't like your job, you can go find another one. If you don't like where you live, you can move. There's no restraints on you. Even if you hate this country, you can move out of it. It's okay.
And it used to be if you liked your doctor, you could keep it.
We won't go there. But there are many facets of this country that don't happen anywhere else on earth.
Nope. Yeah, we just need to be thankful every day for where we live. Look around the world. I've heard it often said that America is the worst place to live except for every place else.
And it's true. There is no better place to live than right here. I'd like to quote a couple of, and unfortunately, I don't know who, I don't have the author of some of these quotes, but it's things that talk about happiness and gratefulness, and it's, one of them is, it's not happy people who are thankful, but it's thankful people who are happy. They have a positive outlook in life, and it makes them a little happier.
And I have one from Oprah, who I'm not a big fan of, but she said, be thankful for what you have. You'll end up having more. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never have enough.
And there is a common something that has been said about living with the never enough syndrome, where no matter what it is, you don't have enough of it. And that's a sad way to live.
And there's an unknown quote here. Be thankful for all the rude, obnoxious, and difficult people you meet in life. They serve as important reminders of how not to be.
And gratitude is a powerful process for shifting your energy and bringing more of what you want into your life. Be grateful for what you already have, and you will attract more good things to your life.
And Chris Tigreen said, thankfulness is difficult to express when one starts with an attitude of entitlement.
And the one that I always think of in the United States is, someone else is happy with less than what you have. And I think that's very true in this country. There are many people in the rest of the world that have so much less than us, and they're happy to have that. And look at all the bountifulness that we have.
It's true. Look around you. Even in the TV commercials that you see where they want you to give money to sponsor a child or something, if you look at those videos, and I'm not saying their life is good, but look at some of those kids that they forget about in the background who are happily running and playing in the mud in their cardboard neighborhood. And it shows you that happiness is internal. You can be thankful. You'll always find something to be thankful for, no matter